gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, and we're going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is Friday, August 16th, 2019. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, happy Friday, Melody.
Happy Friday to you, and I mean, what a week it has been. I mean, you talk about a roller coaster of a ride. And it's going to, we've had a roller coaster of a ride for the, you know, I don't know how many years now, but, you know, when you look at it on a, just the day basis or the week basis, it's, and the thing of it is, we still got the whole ride to go. The whole roller coaster ride to go.
It's a Dramamine economy.
I guess. I mean, we're still working up that first, the first big hill. This was a roller coaster that had a lot of little hills before you hit that big one. Most roller coasters is the big one first. Wow, we're a little different. We're going to do all the little hills first, and then we're going to do the big one. But anyway, gold did a big one today, but to the downside. But really, ladies and gentlemen, I'm pleased with the performance of gold. You have gold down $10 today at $1,513. We had a high of 1518, a low of 1503, and the strength that it's showing at this $15 level, it actually surprises me. We did break through it yesterday, went down in the 1400s. It came back though, and today it managed. And it could be have a lot of paper trading going on in the paper in the gold market. I'll have to take a peek to see what the let's see what the gold future, see which contract that is, see if it's still December contract in gold's 1523. So, you know, that's keeping the spot market up there. So a lot of demand in the paper markets for gold, as silly as I might think that is. But the paper market is there, and that's the reason why sometimes we get a hard time for the spot market to go off. There's other choices out there, but basically in the long run it's going to be hardcore physical gold, and that's what everybody's going to be after, because they're going to realize it doesn't matter what form you hold gold, if it's paper you don't have gold, period. And that will become a reality, and people will recognize that. So again, gold did well today, $1,514. Silver down 16 cents today. That's still staying above 1718. Platinum was up 10 at 853. Palladium was up 3 at 1456. The USDX today was up 0.03 at 98.19. Again, great showings in gold for the strength of what we've seen in the dollar. And did I say crude oil today? No. Up 39 at 54.86. And the paper markets, excuse me, the paper markets today, let's get back to that. Of course, the Dow was up 306 points at 25,886. The NASDAQ was up 129 at 7,895. The S&P was up 41 at 2,888. 10-year yield, 1.54%. That's just shocking. But it isn't shocking because we all know where everything's going. All the foreign Asian and European markets were strong. So, yeah, the central banks were in there flexing their muscles and making sure that the governments and the central bankers were pumping the money into these markets to keep it strong. And I pity the poor people who are buying their pitch. Buy when it's down. Buy now. It's a great deal. It's down. Well, how much? 10%, 8%. It's a great deal. Load up. It's like, yeah, okay. There's other things to load up on, ladies and gentlemen, and that's gold and silver. You know, Dave, we talk a lot of recession, about the economy going into a recession. There's people out there saying we're already in one, but they really don't announce that we're in one, you know, usually until after we're in one anyway. And, you know, we've been talking about for forever, 2 years plus, that the highly unusual dynamic of this synchronized global growth. You have the world's 10 biggest economies growing all at once. Well, now we seem headed for a synchronized slump. And that's what we've said for 25 years. They're going to pump us all up at the same time, and then they're going to dump it at the same time. Global economic data has consistently worsened this year. Japan and three of Europe's four largest economies, Germany, Italy, well, Italy has been really bad. The UK, they've been bad, but they keep Italy going. The UK, they're all heading for a recession by the end of the year. You know, China's growing at its slowest pace in 27 years. We see the IMF, they continue to cut the global growth forecast month after month. And today's New York Times lead, it says, market shutter as signs point to a global slowdown. I mean, how many years have we been telling you this, ladies and gentlemen? It's not going to go away. Trade war dims outlook in China, Germany, the U.S. In short, signs of a looming U.S. recessions is everywhere. The three-month 10-year Treasury yield curve inverted a long time ago, which the San Francisco Fed calls a reliable predictor of recessions. And they should. The Fed knows exactly what's going on.
Yes. Well, and on Wednesday, another recession indicator, the two-year 10-year yield curve also inverted, sending the S&P and Dow down 3%, and it's the biggest drop of the year, over 800 points. The New York Fed's recession probability indicator hit its warning level last month. These inversions, by the way, preceded every U.S. recession over the last 70 years. Now, other warning signs, as Melody mentioned, about some sectors already being in recession, U.S. manufacturing in recession, as is transportation in all sectors, air, rail, freight, and passenger. Airlines are expecting their worst year in five, and the auto industry has laid off more people this year than it has in a decade. The year's not over yet. A growing number of businesses are citing greater risk aversion, largely because of tariffs, as a reason for not making more purchases or capital investments. Economists say that U.S. policies have introduced a real risk of stoking inflation, which, well, at least according to the government, has been absent for more than a decade, hovering below 2%. Retailers large and small say the tariffs are going to force them to raise prices, and that'll probably come just in time for the holiday season, Melody.
Yeah, and you know what? It was my understanding that the inventory for the holiday is already purchased by this time.
A lot of it is.
But that doesn't mean they're not going to blame the tariffs for increasing your prices. If they can increase the prices and have a legitimate excuse, they're going to do so. You know, but we know that they've already been, those tariffs were already into play. I'm not sure about clothing and so forth. I mean, you continue to read conflicting reports. One minute the retail is exempt and then they include it. The next time you read something else, the next exempt. And so it gets a little confusing as far as exactly what products, you know, are seeing the increases, Dave. But, and you know, this time is different. We talk about this all the time. The levers that have saved the economy in the previous recessions, there's nothing there anymore. It's all exhausted because they were able to pull us out of all these recessions with debt, new investment programs. Well, the Fed has one that we talked about here a couple weeks ago on the program. But how impactful is that going to be when you have the world collapsing at the same time? Central bankers, they're cutting rates. Interest rates at a level not seen since the financial crisis, but they just come out and say, "Oh well, you know, we're trying to, you know, keep the recession at bay. You know, we're working for you now." It is just such a joke. You know, their monetary policy just isn't as powerful as it once was. You know, the debt. I mean, even our own country, our debt's greater than our GDP. And there's no signs of, oh, we're going to talk, hey, let's buy Greenland. Oh, yeah, okay, sure. I don't know, that might have been a funny, Dave. We'll talk about that later on in the program. But to me, it's just desperation, complete desperation for either distractions, to move the media in one direction, to distract us from something else, to talk about something else. It's just the only really thing that says that the U.S. economy is in fine shape, that's consumer spending. It's debt. They're not making enough money to spend, you know, the cash that they have. They don't have disposable incomes. They're using credit cards. That doesn't tell me that the U.S. economy is in fine shape. But that's what they'll tell you. The economy has added jobs for 106 consecutive months, although the average is gradually dropping. You know, we're still looking at unemployment, as reported by government, is near a 50-year low. Well, yeah, well, let's look at part-time jobs. How many people have part-time jobs? Each job is counted as a job. So what would it be if we all had, if everybody, I shouldn't say we all have, but what if people out there had jobs with a decent wage, with decent health care? They wouldn't have to work two or three jobs just to make ends meet. What would that unemployment rate be then? So the bottom line, ladies and gentlemen, a recession is coming. We just don't know when. But with all the signs out there, it's going to be sooner than later. And, you know, and just the fear of recession could push the economy into a recession, you know, just like anything else. But so it's up to you. It's, you know, we talked about the Fed not being able to fend off these recessions anymore because they are out of power, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, it's really time to pay attention, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, we know our president wants the Fed to help fend off a feared recession, but more and more economists are saying, in fact, some are saying it's clear that the Fed doesn't have enough firepower left to make any kind of major impact. Besides, some economists say there's really not much reason for the Fed to act any more aggressively than it already plans to. Fed officials have some explaining to do when it comes to cutting interest rates and driving down the yields on safe investments like Treasury bonds to near record low levels. So says Chris Rupke, chief economist at the firm MUFG. He continues by saying they don't need to explain their rate cuts to voters or to the Trump economics team, but they need to explain themselves to the history books. Very interesting comment. Trump continues to clamor for rate cuts, significant steep cuts, and the market does anticipate at least two more this year. That'll leave the Fed with only tiny room to cut further, you know, if the recession, you know, comes on despite it or because of things like the Fed. You know, it's currently targeting its benchmark rate between just 2 and 2.25%.
Well, yeah, I mean, they can jockey around all they want with while they can by cutting and so forth, but we all know, I mean, how many negative rates is coming. So that's where they're going to go. They have to. That's what you're looking for. So poor savers. And what are the savers are going to do? They think they're going to be smart and pull their money because it's not made and put it in the stock market. That's the worst thing that you can do. But that's what it'll force them to do. You know? EU trade surplus with the U.S. is at $83 billion, Dave.
Yeah, you know, if the president wants to heave more trade threats at the EU, a fresh batch of numbers just gave him a reason. Figures published today, Melody, show that the EU's trade surplus with the U.S. stood at almost 75 billion euros. That's $83 billion equivalence in the first half of 2019. That's up more than 11% from last year. Now, while exports to America have consistently outpaced imports, the difference between them has steadily increased. a decade ago, Europe's bilateral surplus with the U.S. was just 18.7 billion euros. And what's it now? 75? That's, oh man, that's one quarter. Another highlight may catch the eye of someone like Trump, who sees trade deficits as a sign of weakness. Germany's surplus, by far the largest in the Eurozone. Total exports outweighed imports by 112 billion euros with Germany from January through June.
Was that one with the U.S. or within the bloc?
No, with the U.S.
With the U.S., wow. Well, you know, the surplus for shipments within the EU narrowed by about a third compared to the previous year, though, and it has remained steady at the 88 billion euros for business with countries outside the bloc. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see. I don't know if the Brexit, you haven't heard a whole lot about the Brexit, but we do know that, you know, we want to make a trade agreement with the EU. I don't know. It's interesting times, Dave.
That it sure is.
You know, while we're on tariffs, we're going to talk a little bit about China has called the looming U.S. tariffs a violation of accords reached by President Trump and Xi Jinping, vowing retaliation as Beijing also pushed back on Trump's efforts to link the trade war with the turmoil in Hong Kong. And, of course, President Trump yesterday had said he had a call coming soon with President Xi. The plans for 10% tariffs on the additional $300 billion, of course, of the Chinese imports have taken the U.S. and China off the track of resolving their dispute, although that has been postponed till what, the first of the year, I believe? I didn't think they would do it anyway, but China says it has no choice but to take necessary measures to retaliate. And yesterday, President Trump said that any trade agreement with China has to be on our terms.
Hmm. Well, you know, the president did announce that tariffs are set for September 1st and December 15th. China's halted purchases of agricultural goods and allowed the yuan to weaken. If we have time, we'll talk about the situation with soybeans a little bit later in the program. Still, top negotiators on both sides apparently held a phone call earlier this week. And, you know, China's still planning to come to Washington next month for another in the series of face-to-face meetings on these trade talks.
And we're going to be heading into a break right now, ladies and gentlemen. I hear the music, so please stay tuned. We'll be right back. And thank you for joining us. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Suderstrom, here with Dave Allen.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. Visit our website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Sign up for a weekly newsletter and blogs. And, of course, all your gold and silver coins. Give us a call. It's kind of laid-back Friday. There's so much going on. It was just such a hectic week. And so we're basically just going to do some news. Some of the things that are going on, maybe some new headlines are popping up during this hour. I always love this hour doing the live show, Dave, because a lot of your breaking stories happen at 4 o'clock after the markets close. So, you know, they hold all the good stuff until the market close, because heaven forbid that gives them, you know, they have a lot of hours before it opens, and they can do all the damage control that needs to be done. So it's an exciting hour sometimes. Consumer sentiment fell to 92.1 in August. This is the lowest indicator readout since the start of 2019. This is the University of Michigan's preliminary August numbers. Consumer sentiment fell to 92.1. Who was that report by?
No, that's the same thing.
Their preliminary numbers came in well below Wall Street estimates. The Economist, polled by Reventative, expected the preliminary read to reach 97, down from 98 in July. So the August losses spanned all index components. Businesses across all sectors have curtailed spending amid efforts to counteract the impact of U.S. and China tariffs. Poor consumer sentiment suggests those efforts haven't fully staved off concern. Businesses all except the government.
Yeah, really. Richard Curtin, who's a chief economist of the survey from the University of Michigan, said monetary and trade policies have heightened consumer uncertainty. There's that word again, uncertainty, about their future financial prospects. And I think that's the one big lesson that we have to remember, ladies and gentlemen, that, you know, in addition to the volatility, the roller coaster that Melody speaks of, is this uncertainty, investor uncertainty, and that is certainly going to contribute to growing fear in a geopolitical and an economic sense. Now, earlier this week, the president announced that the U.S. Would delay proposed tariffs on certain Chinese imports like clothing, electronics, and footwear, which sent the retail stocks surging. And he said, of course, he delayed those tariffs in part of, you know, over concerns about shopping during the holiday season. Curtin says the main takeaway for consumers from the first cut in interest rates in a decade by the Fed was to increase apprehensions about a possible recession. Yesterday, the Commerce Department released solid July retail sales figures showing that spending at retail stores and restaurants, surprisingly, Melody, rose 0.7% during the month of July, after a more modest 0.3% gain in June.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the Iran's Grace 1 oil tanker, you know, remains off the coast of Gibraltar. It was released yesterday, and while the U.S. threatened sanction against anyone dealing with the ship, the U.S. earlier said it is gravely disappointed with Britain after a court allowed the release of the tanker, and it warned that ports, banks, and anyone else who does business with the ship or its crew might be subject to penalties. The tanker's cargo was originally bound for Syria, we know, and Iran has provided the assurance that it is no longer the case. And so the evidence is clear and the facts speak louder than the self-serving political statements we are hearing today. It added without specifying which comments it referred to. So is it free or is it still sitting there? I know the U.S. wanted it, but they didn't get it.
Apparently it's sitting there in the waters.
Still sitting there, yeah. But
They said the court order rewards the U.S. Administration rewards Iranian terrorism, and Tehran will interpret the action as appeasement. Now, it's not clear when the Grace One will set sail again. It's remained in Gibraltar since British forces seized it last month for violating the trade sanctions. The U.S. Department of Justice hadn't filed the appropriate action to block the vessel's release, the Gibraltar Supreme Court said yesterday. American officials said the U.K. should think of the tanker issue in terms of their broader relationship with the U.S. That's particularly as Prime Minister Boris Johnson's government presses forward with Brexit and seeks a bilateral free trade agreement with the U.S. While the people wouldn't say the release threatens prospects for that deal, they added that the U.K. should ask if it wants to do business with the U.S. or Iran.
Well, you know, now it's sort of setting up that this decision to release the ship is basically setting up, essentially sets up a race between the Iran and the U.S. over its fate. So, again, the tensions are continuing to increase in that region. And I don't know. I don't know where this all ends, Dave. It's I just can't imagine everybody coming to the table and sitting down and talking and having a peaceful resolution on this. So, but
well, speaking of tensions, you know, North Korea fired two more ballistic missiles into its eastern sea. That's the sixth volley in 3 weeks, extending the North Korean regime's most prolific run of tests since Donald Trump took office. Now, these weapons, which were likely short-range ballistic missiles, were launched from one of the southeastern provinces, that was today, and traveled roughly 140 miles. The test appeared to be consistent with Kim Jong-un's push to demonstrate the ability to strike all of South Korea, as well as parts of Japan, with new hard-to-intercept missiles. North Korea now has tested 15 ballistic missiles since abandoning a 17-month testing freeze in May. That exceeds the pace of launches in 2017 after Trump took office, when Kim Test prompted our president to threaten him with fire and fury. Trump has said he won't let such incidents get in the way of talks between the two leaders, since North Korea has refrained from testing nuclear bombs or the larger intercontinental ballistic missiles needed to carry them to the U.S.
I don't know. What I want to know is that no one is reporting on is they're just talking about what happened between North Korea and South Korea. They were getting along swimmingly. Now all of a sudden this is all going on, so something happened.
Or something didn't.
Well, perhaps. But if something didn't, that's the same as something did. But something, you know, something had to have happened, you know, in order for him to just to start sort of ignoring the relationship with South Korea, that they were getting along, you know, they were, you know, and it seems the funny thing, the ironic thing is, when did these missiles start going, before or after President Trump went to the DMZ?
Well, initially before.
Did they actually start before?
Yeah, the
first
round? The early batch. Oh, the last round. There were a couple of these smaller or shorter range missile launches beforehand. You know, I think, look, Kim's an impetuous guy, Melody, and you know, I don't put him past it. I mean, it could be that maybe this trade spat between South Korea and Japan, you know, is sort of, maybe that's been preoccupying the South Korean leaders, and you know, maybe this is Kim's way of trying to get the South's attention, you know, back on it, on him. I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there for consumption. We certainly aren't privy to any other more real events having occurred that may have led to this. It's just part of an ongoing strategy by Kim to perfect their capabilities, and you know, at the same time,
it does give them leverage. You know, yeah.
Cause a little more disruption.
It's always funny though, whenever I see or read that, you know, he sets off even the short-term missiles, I think it's kind of like, see what I can do?
Well, yeah, no,
you know,
agree.
I mean, that's, you know, it's kind of like,
it's like child's play.
Child's play, yeah, exactly. Let's see, where else are we going to go? And we can make this short, because we got a lot to talk about today. A lot of things going on around the world, and we're going to talk about Maduro, but it looks like the Pelosi has threatened to block any future bilateral trade agreement between the U.S. and the U.K. if Brexit puts at risk the accord that brought an end to the conflict in Northern Ireland. I can't imagine if Brexit undermines the Good Friday Accord, there will be no chance of a U.S.-U.K. trade agreement passing the Congress. The peace of the Good Friday Agreement is treasured by the American people and will be fiercely defended. I don't know about that, but Pelosi's bid to influence Brexit follows remarks in London by John Bolton, which is President Trump's top national security advisor. Bolton had said a bilateral trade agreement would be a top priority for the administration after the UK exits the European Union and would get overwhelming support in the US Congress. Let me ask you a question. If I understand, Brexit isn't going to get done if it would undermine that accord.
That's been the crux.
So there would be no trade agreement anyway.
That's been the crux of a deal versus a no deal, you know, since Theresa, May was prime minister, and you know, remains the crux of the matter for a lot of members of Parliament. Now, you know, I mean, Speaker Pelosi, I mean, you know, with all due respect to our fellow Americans, Melody, I doubt whether 5 or 10% of them, remember the Good Friday Agreement, you know, much less, you know, being treasured.
I know.
By them. Now, on the other hand, you know, she clearly is in a position to block any consideration, you know, of a bilateral UK-US trade deal, you know, from, you know, ever reaching the House floor. That threat can't be taken with too much of a grain of salt. come now.
I know. It's just crazier and crazier, Dave.
It's just absurd.
Maduro is turning brutal repression against his own military. There was a recent brutal killing of Captain Rafael Acosta, which is an indication just how President Maduro's embattled government has turned brutal repression against its own military in a no-holds-barred effort to retain control of the armed forces and, through them, of course, the state. The top military leaders have repeatedly declared their allegiance to Maduro, but over the past couple of years, the oil-rich economy, we've seen it crumble, and you have a majority of the Venezuelans are left without food, medicine. Factions within the security forces, they've staged at least 5 attempts to overthrow or assassinate the president. And so again, the government claims to have foiled at least a dozen more plots in that period. Including a scheme in which Captain Acosta and 5 others under arrest were accused of participating.
Yeah, some interesting behind-the-scenes scoop that we're not, reading everyday Melody. The Venezuelan state media calls this stream of real and imagined threats a continuous coup. Maduro's socialist party is resorting to the siege mentality to justify, surveillance everywhere, arbitrary detentions of its people, tortures of perceived enemies, including those inside Venezuela's strong armed forces, 160,000 of them. Yeah, General Manuel Christopher Figueroa, Venezuela's former head of intelligence, he defected to the U.S. in April. He said the abuse of military officers has grown because they represent a real threat to Maduro. Apparently there are now 217 active and retired officers, Melody, being held in jails in Venezuela, including 12 generals. That's not chump change. Coalition for Human Rights and Democracy has documented 250 cases of torture committed by Venezuelan security forces against military officers, including their relatives and opposition activists. That's just since 2017.
Wow. And a lot of these victims, they spent years in jail, of course, but that's what you have in a socialist nation. A few have been convicted of crimes. Most have not even been charged. The UN Human Rights Commission published a scathing report that said the Venezuelan government subjected prisoners as political opponents to electric shocks, suffocation with plastic bags, of course, waterboarding, and, it continues. The conditions are certainly seem to be worsening, and so I don't know where that ends either.
It's not going to end well.
It's hard to believe that 4 million Venezuelans have fled the deteriorating these conditions, but I guess if you could, you would.
Yeah, some have made their way up to Florida now. I'm reading. Most of them, however, are staying in South America. A lot had fled to a very welcoming Colombia on its the southern and eastern border. I forget my geography there, but that's a big one. Boy, if you look at what happened after Hurricane Maria and, with all the Puerto Rican residents fleeing to the mainland U.S., Venezuela were a little bit closer. God knows what kind of refugee crisis we'd be experiencing on top of what's there now.
Wow. We're heading into a break, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. We're in the third segment of the program today, the last one for Friday, August 16th. And we're just going to do some quick headlines, and we saved Brevity is Golden for Friday. We're going to do that as the last story, so please, please stay tuned. So let's just go over some of these, Dave. Housing starts, they fell for the third straight month. And the home building, steep decline in construction of multifamily housing units. We did see a jump in permits, though, to a seven-month high. Kind of offered a little bit of hope for the struggling housing market. But housing starts dropped 4% to seasonally adjusted annual rate of 1.19 million units last month. This is all out from the Commerce Department today. And, of course, they're going to blame Tropical Storm Barry. But, come on. Louisiana home building was likely disrupted by Tropical Storm Barry, which drenched Louisiana in the middle of the month. That's going to make it enough to affect the housing starts? Oh, please. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on. But anyway, anything else to add to that story, Dave? Anything important?
Well, let's see here. I mean, we know that the housing market hasn't benefited that much from declining mortgage rates because of land and labor shortages. You know, they're constraining builders' ability to build sought-after lower-priced homes. And that's left the housing market continuing to grapple with tight inventory and sluggish sales growth. You know, single-family home building, which accounts for the largest share of the housing market, increased a little over 1% in July. It's the highest in 6 months at 876,000 units. Building permits also surged over 8%. That's the largest gain since 2017, to a rate of 1.3 million units in July. So, you know, it's positive development for home builders, the permits in particular, which have been weak this year, particularly in the single family housing segment.
Well, this is amazing. 19 million acres of farmland, Dave, has not been planted this year.
Yeah, that's you talk about an eye-opener, Melody. I mean, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, 19 million acres of farmland have not been planted with crops this year in the United States. If that sounds really bad to you, well, that's because the situation we're facing is really bad. American farmers look to be in the midst of an unprecedented crisis. You know, this marks the most, agriculture calls it prevented plant acres. It's the most since USDA's Farm Service Agency began releasing these numbers in 2007, and is 17.5 million acres more than reported at this time just last year. America's heartland, you know, I think a lot of listeners will know, has been absolutely pummeled by a lot of rain and unprecedented flooding throughout the first half of this year. And of those prevented plant acres, more than 73% were in just 12 Midwestern states that plant mostly corn, wheat, and the new crop to nowhere, we'll call it, soybeans.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about this on this program, about the farmers' condition, how their bankruptcies are skyrocketing. Suicides amongst farmers is increasing. They have a lot of difficult times. Unfortunately, the subsidies that do come from government, since the tariffs have affected the soybeans, of course, that is going to the larger conglomerates. but not to the little family farmers and so forth. So they certainly are getting having a very difficult time. It was just so wet and everything, and so a lot of farmers were able to get some seeds into the ground despite these challenging conditions, but the crops are not in good shape. According to the latest crop progress report, only 57% of the corn is considered to be in good or excellent shape. That's amazing. Unfortunately, the soybean crop, it's even in worse shape. At this point, only 54% of the soybeans are in good or excellent shape. Only 8% of the U.S. spring wheat crop has been harvested so far. That's sharply below the 30% five-year average. So what does this all mean? Well, it means that we do have a real crisis on our hands. A lot less crops are being grown, and a substantial percentage of the crops that are being grown, they're not in good shape. So yields are going to be way down, and that means that the U.S. agricultural production is going to be way, way below the initial expectations. And so that means there's going to be a lot less food grown.
Yeah. Well, I also see our friends, the U.S. Postal Service, Melody, has released some troubling numbers.
Again?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's you know, they continue to do it. They don't do, I don't know what they do about it, but the U.S. Postal Service reported two troubling numbers. The first, that revenue was flat at just above $17 billion, and the other was that it lost $1.1 billion for the period that ended June 30th. So, their revenue was flat. So they increased their spending by $1.1 billion, correct?
Well, I'm not sure. Well, let's put it this way. I'm not sure they increased it by $1.1 billion, but certainly their expenses had to be $18.1 billion. Right. $1.1, right? Yeah.
Right.
So
right.
I don't know what kind of increase that represented over, you know, the previous fiscal year, but I doubt that it's less spending.
But you know what? You know, you have these arguments that the USPS is too large, some of which dates back decades, and the first one of those is delivering mail 6 days a week is unnecessary. And but what they don't talk about is the impact that Amazon has had on it and the arrangements that they had with Amazon. They're making these people work 7 days a week. You know, they're processing packages 7 days a week. And they're also not talking about, it's the only government agency that, well, it's not a government agency, but the only ones that's dictated by government to pay their pensions, what, 5 years in advance, 10 years, you know, ahead? So that's what's really put them into these terrible losses year after year after year. But
yeah, they're just there do seem to be a couple of ways to make it the operations a lot more effective. You know, you mentioned one of them, the six-day delivery. There's still, you know, over 31,000 retail post offices. Every time there's talk about, you know, closing some here or there, you know, that everyone, you know, reaches out, screams to their congressman or woman, and you know, they say how important it is for their tiny post office and, you know, their rural community, you know, it's you know, relies on, you know, this building, and you know, that multiply that, you know, times 50 states, times however many thousands of, you know, zip codes there are, and, you know, not much in the way of improvements get finished. So with everything the USPS is up against, including, I mean, certainly not the least of which is Amazon, boy, they've got their work cut out for them, you know.
But you know, the sad thing, Dave, is the changes that they should should make that would actually have an impact, they're probably not allowed to do. And, you know, you can start with the employees, the benefits, you know, they promise these huge benefits. So they have, you know, these, you know, and again, it's they made promises that they're not going to be able to keep. So are the rates of postage just going to continue to go up? Our service is going to continue to decline. And the thing it is, I mean, they can cut delivering mail on Saturdays, but they don't do anything else to have that impact effective for a long period of time, because they don't do what else is necessary to keep everything as it should. Does that make sense? Am I making myself clear? And plus you have inflation then too. Let's not forget inflation.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just like anything else. Yeah, we're going to cut corners here, but we're not going to do anything to stem our future outlay. So eventually those things that you cut to help, I mean, they become meaningless after how many years?
Well, yeah. I mean, part of the, I call it an issue, not necessarily a problem, but certainly, you know, contributing or related to some of the, we'll call it the human resource costs, is that U.S. Postal Service historically has had a very strong union.
Yep.
So a lot of most, and if not all, of the benefits its employees enjoy, you know, have been collectively bargained for over the years. And once you have a benefit, it's really difficult to take it away.
But they always promise more than, you know. But anyway, it's just as simple. It's the same as all the retirement accounts, or many of them, are facing today. But this is interesting. Then we'll get on with the brevity is golden. We're going to end the program on a lighter note, right?
Hey.
We're talk about camps?
Always.
Okay. The U.S. is moving forward with an $8 billion sale of the F-16 fighter jets to Taiwan. Of course, this is going to anger China more, particularly when the long-running trade war between Washington and Beijing. It's only going to hurt the relationship more. And the State Department told Congress last night, right after Secretary of State Mike Pompeo had signed a memo approving the sale, Congress is not expected to object to the move. For weeks, lawmakers from both parties had accused the administration of delaying the sale to avoid jeopardizing trade negotiations, or to use it so. Why don't we go ahead and get to your brevity as golden, Dave?
Well, yeah, on that upbeat note.
you mean this, Ruby's note?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, this week's topic is camp, summer camp to be precise. But it's not your parents' or even grandparents' summer camp. You know, I remember my summer camps as a kid, Camp Kiwanis, sponsored by the local YMCA. Scrambled eggs, bacon, frosted flakes, and whole milk for breakfast. Lebanon bologna sandwiches and bologna and cheese sandwiches for lunch. Good old grilled hot dogs, hamburgers, and us potato chips for dinner. But at New England Base Camp, the Dutch ovens are heating up over charcoals. At 9:30 a.m., a whole array of ingredients is arrayed on picnic tables and steel carts as campers knead dough under a soaring canopy of oak and pine trees. They've got an ambitious menu to produce before 3 p.m. Quiche and sautéed vegetables, panini sandwiches featuring tomatoes grown at the camp, capped off by apple crisp pie drizzled with honey produced from the camp's beehives. Forget hot dogs and s'mores, Melody. Farm-to-table cooking classes are some of the most popular new offerings at summer camp this year. Ours was probably bow and arrowing and, you know, how to properly steer a canoe. You know, a generation of foodie kids raised on Chop, the Great British Bake Off, and Master Chef Junior won serious cooking lessons, camp directors say. And it's not just cooking. There's a growing curiosity among kids to learn where their food comes from, fueled by the resurgence of farmers markets, school gardens, and an emphasis on eating local. So summer camps are answering the call. You know, many are resurrecting long dormant vegetable gardens, building alliances with local farms, and expanding kitchens to accommodate their eager young campers. You know, campers are now taught how to make acorn flour for pancakes, a feat likely to impress culinary challenged parents. Apparently, judging by how many stumble over the basics during weekend cooking programs for, you know, the moms and dads that these camps offer. Not to be outdone, the Girl Scouts, who for years taught girls how to bake with solar ovens, you know, the cardboard boxes and foil, they've added a new session at one of their busiest camps in Waltham, Massachusetts. It's aimed at new cooks who long for fresh food but have limited space to grow it, teaching farm-to-table skills retrofitted for the backyard gardener. You know, at 11:45 a.m., you know, boys still elbow deep in apples. A couple of quiches were golden and ready for sampling. Ben, an 11-year-old who never tasted quiche before, tentatively stuck his fork in, took a bite, paused, then gave it a thumbs up. Danny Sheehan, a 17-year-old who's hoping the lessons would improve the quality of his outdoor cooking, quietly scarfed the quiche. Then he went back for seconds. So goes summer camp in the new millennium, Melody. And that is this week's Brevity is Golden.
And that's great. And that's a lot of talking points in there. And that's this week's financial survival program. We'll be back on Monday, ladies and gentlemen. Until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.